Her ankles with the end of the cord. Leisha thrashed about at first, but every movement tightened the cord around her throat, and she quickly calmed lest she strangle herself. She was hefted over a strong shoulder and carried to the window, shivering in the cool night air as she was taken out and veritably run down a ladder. Leisha could tell by the way the ladder bounced that she had at least two captors. If her weight hindered the man who held her, he gave no sign, running swiftly through the night streets with even breath and steady heart. Leisha tried to stay oriented, but it proved impossible. She was taken up a set of steps and into a building, down a series of hallways, and then through a door. The men stopped, and she was unceremoniously dropped to the floor. A thick carpet kept her from real harm. The cord at her ankles and wrists was cut, and the hood was yanked from her head. The room was not brightly lit, but after being hooded, the oil lamp stung. Leisha raised a shaking hand to shield her eyes before they adjusted. When they did, she found herself strewn on her belly on the floor before Anevera, lying on a bed of pillows and regarding her as a cat might a cornered mouse. The Damaja looked to the two warriors behind her. They were clad head to toe in black, as all Dal Sharam, and their night veils were up, but they carried neither spear nor shield, each with a ladder held in perfect balance on one of his shoulders.
"You were never here."
The men bowed and vanished. She looked down at Leisha and smiled.
"Men have their uses. Please, come join me."
Anevera gestured to another pile of pillows across from her. Leisha wobbled slightly as the blood returned to her numb feet, but she stood as quickly as she was able, resisting the urge to rub her throat as she looked around the large room. It was a pillowed love chamber, dimly lit and scented, every surface coated with velvet or silk. The door was right behind her.
"No one guards the other side."
Anevera waved her hand as if to give Leisha permission to check. She did, reaching for the brass pull ring, but she was thrown backward. She saw wards flare around the lintel, jamb, and sill of the door, but they faded in an instant, gone except for ghostly afterimages that danced before her still adjusting eyes. More curious than fearful, Leisha got back to her feet, studying the wards masterfully painted in silver and gold around the frame. Many were new to her, but she noticed wards of silence worked in with the rest. No one outside would hear what went on within. She flicked a finger against the net, watching the wards around the contact point flare for a moment, illuminating the tightly woven net.
"What's power in it?"
There were no corlings about to provide the necessary magic, and without magic, wards were just writing. Given time, Leisha knew she could disable the wards and escape, but that was time she would have to take her attention away from Anevera, and there was no telling what the woman might do. She turned back to the Damaja, still lounging on her pillows.
"All right."
Leisha walked over and took a seat opposite Anevera.
"What is it you'd like to discuss?"
"Do you mean to play the fool? Did you think I would not know the moment you touched him?"
"So what if you do? There was no crime. By your own laws, a man may bed whom he pleases, so long as she's not the wife of another man."
"Perhaps behaving like a harlot is the way a woman gains a husband in the North. But among my people, such women are kept in line by the wives of their victims."
"Amon asked for my hand long before I bedded him, and I doubt he considers himself a victim. His willingness was quite apparent in his vigor."
"Ugh! Renounce my husband's proposal and flee Everam's bounty tonight! I give you this one chance to live."
"Your last two attempts on my life failed, Damaja. What makes you think another would have success?"
"Because I wouldn't leave it up to a 15-year-old girl this time, and because my husband won't find us here in time to save you. I should tell everyone that you came to murder me the night you seduced my husband. No one will question my right to end you."
"I question whether you can manage it."
Anevera produced a small object from beneath her pillows. The flame struck Leisha with an intense flash of heat before it vanished.
"I can incinerate you where you sit."
It was an impressive trick, but Leisha, who had been brewing flame work for over a decade, found the effect less profound than the means by which it was created. Anevera had struck no spark, mixed no chemics, made no impact. She looked more closely at the object in Anevera's hand, and it all became clear. It was a flame demon's skull.
"That's how she's powering the wards!"
Leisha wondered why she hadn't thought of it herself months ago.
"Alagahora! Demon bones! Is that how you power the doorframe? Are there Alagahora hidden in the wood?"
Anevera glanced toward the door, and in that instant Leisha's hand darted to a pocket of her apron, coming out with a handful of toss bags she threw Anevera's way. and Evra threw her arms in front of her face. Leisha wasted no time, crossing the space between them in an instant and grabbing the wrist that held the demon's skull. She pressed her thumb hard into a nerve cluster, and the skull fell to the floor. Leisha's other hand was not idle, curling into a fist. Leisha drew back for a second blow, but Enevra rolled onto the floor and twisted, grabbing Leisha's shoulders and driving a knee between her legs.
Oh, did my husband thrust well? Did my husband thrust hard?
Leisha had never felt such pain. She grabbed blindly for the Damaja's hair, but Enevra caught her sleeve cuffs in tight fists, guiding Leisha's arms away as a jongleur might guide a puppet. In her heavy skirts, Leisha was helpless to resist as Enevra slithered behind her and dropped the sleeves in favor of a chokehold.
Thank you. I would have killed you with clean fire and spared the paint on my nails, but this is much more satisfying.
Leisha could reach no vulnerable point with hand or powder, and the world began to blur as the air in her lungs depleted. Leisha was beginning to black out when she pulled the warded knife from her belt and drove it into Enevra's thigh. Leisha was able to kick away. She rolled to her knees with the knife held out before her. Enevra rolled the other way, reaching into a pouch at her waist and throwing something Leisha's way. Leisha dove to the side. One of the projectiles passed clear through her thigh and another lodged in her shoulder. She pulled it free and found it held a demon tooth. It was covered in her red blood, but she could feel with her thumb the wards etching into its surface. She shoved it into a pocket for later study. Enevra was back on her feet by then, charging at Leisha. Leisha put her knife up as she got back to her feet. Enevra checked herself and began to circle. She pulled a curved knife of her own from her belt, the warded blade sharp as any of Leisha's scalpels. Leisha put a hand into another of her apron's pouches, and Enevra made a similar reach into the black velvet bag at her wrist. The Corling Prince watched in amusement as the females postured like high princes when the queen was preparing to mate. It had intended to consume the northern female's mind and replace her with its mimic to get close and kill the air, but their own politics were so much more delicious. They could break both the air's spirit and his dream of unity at once. All they needed was a nudge. It was the darkest part of the night when Jardir finally returned to his palace. He was not tired. He had not truly felt tired of body since he had first used the Spear of Khaji, but he longed for his bed nevertheless, if only for a chance to close his eyes and dream of her to while away some of the hours before he could visit again. Leisha Paper truly was a gift from Evarim. Her acceptance of his proposal seemed assured, and with it his foothold in the Northland, but he found that mattered less to him now than the thought of having her at his side. Brilliant, beautiful, and young enough to bear him many sons, she also contained a boundless passion that came out in her anger and in her loving. A worthy bride for even the Deliverer, and a valuable check against the Damaja's rising power. Enevra would try to stop the marriage, of course, but that was a worry for another day. Jardir saw the light on in his chambers and frowned. Evarim's bounty had no undercity for women and children, even on waning. His wives instead took turns waiting in his private chambers with a bath and a willing body, but Jardir wanted neither water nor woman. His lust could only be sated by one, and beneath his robes, her scent was still on his skin. He wanted to keep it there a while longer.
I require nothing. Leave me!
But the women in his room were not lesser wives, and they made no effort to leave.
We need to talk.
Leisha was there, and Enevra was at her side.
For once, I agree with the northern whore.
Jardir looked more closely at the women. Their clothes were ragged and torn. Enevra had a blood-soaked scarf tied around her leg, and Leisha's shoulder was similarly bound. Enevra's nose was twisted and swollen 3 times its normal size, and Leisha's throat was purple and bruised. She favored one leg.
What has happened?
Your first wife and I have been talking,
and we have decided we will not share you.
Jardir made to go to them, but Leisha held up a finger that checked him like a child.
You keep your distance! No touching either of us again until you make a choice.
Choice?
Her or me. You can't have us both.
The one you choose can be your Jiwaka, and the other shall have a quick death at your hand in the town circle.
Leisha gave Enevra a look of disgust, but did not argue.
You agree to this, even with your gatherer's vow?
Strip her naked and cast her into the street for all to see, if you prefer.
Weak, like all northerners, leaving enemies to strike another day.
What you call weakness, I call strength.
Jardir looked from one woman to the other, unable to believe matters had come to this, but their eyes were hard and he knew they meant every word. The choice was impossible. Kill Leisha? Unthinkable. Even if it wouldn't destroy any potential allies in the north, Jardir would sooner cut out his own heart than harm her. But the alternative was equally impossible. The Damating would not follow Leisha, and if he stripped Enevra of power and in favor of a northern woman, they might choose to follow Enevra still, causing a schism through his empire that might never heal. And she was his first wife, the mother of his children, who had orchestrated his rise to power and given him the tools to win Sharak-Kaa. Despite the pain she regularly caused him, he looked at her and found he loved her still.
I cannot make such a choice.
You must, now, or I will cut the whore's throat myself.
Not if I cut yours first.
No!
Jardir threw the spear of Khaji. It struck the wall and embedded deeply, quivering between the two women. He pounced on them cat-quick, grabbing their wrists and pulling them away from each other. As he did, the wards on his crown flared to life, illuminating the women, and both shook their heads as if waking from a dream.
Behind you!
Alagai-Kaa!
Alagai-Kaa, the name Jardir and his men had laughingly given to the rock demon that followed the Par-Chin, but it was an ancient name, one that carried an aura of immense power. Alagai-Kaa was consort to the Mother of Demons, and he and his sons were said to be the most powerful of the demon lords, generals of Ni's forces. Jardir spun to meet the demon, but there was nothing to see at first. Then, as he concentrated, the crown of Khaji warmed once more, and he could see that part of the room was clouded by magic. There was a ripple in the cloud, and suddenly a demon more fearsome than any he had ever seen leapt at him. He reached for the spear, but it held fast in the wall for the split second it took the demon to cross the floor and tackle Jardir. Jardir was knocked over the bed, and the two of them landed hard on the far side, the demon clawing madly at him. He felt the ceramic armor plates in his robe shattering under its claws, but they blunted the initial attack. The demon seemed to sense this, and its mouth widened impossibly, growing rows of new teeth right before his eyes as it became a maw large enough to swallow his entire head. Jardir rolled and pushed out with his arms, gaining enough space to work his leg up between them. He kicked out, knocking the demon away long enough for him to tear off his robes and reveal the scars Enevra had cut into his skin. They flared brightly as he met the demon's next attack head-on. Leisha hadn't known the demon was in her mind until Jardir touched her and the wards on his crown flared. She heard the demon's whispers then and knew them for what they were. The demon was in the room with them. Leisha resisted, as did Enevra, thrashing wildly against its control, but the outcome was never in doubt. The demon would have them in a moment. Already she felt an enormous weight in her limbs as the mind demon commanded her to lie down, helpless and weak, while it watched its bodyguard kill Jardir. Leisha looked around frantically, spotting an incense tray on the nightstand that had not yet been cleaned. She flung herself toward it as she went down, pretending it was an accident as she stuck her hand in the greasy ashes and knocked the tray to the floor in a cloud. Enevra hit the floor as well, limbs flopping weakly, and Leisha rolled toward her, using the last of her energy to draw a ward on Enevra's forehead, the same ward at the center of Jardir's crown. Immediately, the symbol flared, and even as Leisha fell, her limbs useless, and Enevra sat up. The demon seemed not to notice, its attention on Jardir fighting for his life. Enevra scowled and grabbed Leisha's hair.
You are still a whore.
Enevra dipped her finger in the ashes, drawing a mind ward on Leisha's forehead as well. Leisha sat up, reaching for her warded knife. Enevra took what looked like a warded lump of coal from the black felt pouch at her waist and held it toward the mind demon. Lightning arced from the stone to strike the demon. It shrieked as it was thrown across the room, hitting the wall before dropping lifeless to the ground. The demon changed shape continually, but Jardir pressed his attack. He matched the demon's raw aggression with the fury of a warrior bred for the maze. His crown flared brightly, and he felt so suffused with power that the wounds the demon inflicted began healing before the full damage was done.
I am fighting Alagai-Kaa, and I am winning!
Then, the demon picked up a heavy table in one giant claw and smashed it down on him as a hammer strikes a nail. Bones splintered on the impact, jutting from his leg and stabbing into his innards. He felt the magic speeding his body's natural healing along at an incredible rate, but it could not set the broken bones, and he felt them healing at odd angles. But before the demon could bring the table down again, it grabbed its head, dropping the table. Jadir kicked out with his good leg to deflect it as the demon's flesh seemed to melt like wax and it stumbled about. Jadir looked up then and saw why. He hadn't been fighting Alagai Ka at all. Leisha and Enevera stood over the smoking body of a slender demon with a gigantic head. Even from across the room, Jadir could sense the power and evil the creature radiated. The demon he had fought was its hasik, brainless muscle to clear paths and break skulls that were beneath its master to shatter personally. The slender demon lifted its head. The demon drew a ward in the air, dispersing the energy. It reached out, and the demon bone flew from her head. The slender demon caught it, and the bone glowed briefly in the demon's grasp before the magic was absorbed and the bone crumbled to dust. The demon reached out again, and Enevera's horror pouch flew to its hands. It upended the bag, dropping her precious dice into its clawed hand. Leisha and Enevera charged the demon with their warded knives, but it drew another ward in the air that flared to throw them across the room as if picked up by a great wind. The Alagai horror glowed as the demon absorbed their power. Jadir felt a strange mix of fear and relief as the dice that had controlled his life for more than 20 years crumbled to dust. The mimic demon regained its senses as soon as its master recovered, but Jadir was already moving, springing across the broken bed on his good leg. He caught the spear of Kaji in his hands as he rolled off the far side, letting his weight pull it from the wall. Demon screamed through Jardir's mangled leg as he came to his feet, but he embraced it effortlessly, his movement sharp and decisive as he drew back and threw. The spear blasted through the mind demon's skull, and continuing on to stick quivering in the far wall. The mind demon fell dead, and without it, the mimic fell to the ground, thrashing about as if on fire. Finally, it lay still, a melted pile of scale and claw. Enevera went to Jadir and pulled hard at his foot to give herself play to reinsert the bone jutting from his leg. Shaking off her own pains, Leisha fumbled to her side, taking the bone in her hand and guiding it back into the proper alignment. As with Harlan, the wound began to close almost instantly, but Leisha still reached for needle and thread to stitch it evenly.
There is no need.
Enevera rose to her feet and went to the mind demon's body. She drew her warded knife and cut off one of its vestigial horns. She returned with a foul, ichorous thing, then removed a thin brush and bottle from her pouch. She drew neat wards along the edges of Jardir's wound, and as she passed the horn over them, the wards flared, closing the incision seamlessly. She did the same for her own wound, and then wordlessly tended to Leisha, not meeting her eyes. Leisha watched in silence, memorizing the wards Enevera used and the fashion in which she knit them together. She looked at the horn when she was finished. It was still intact.
I'll make better dice from this one's bones anyway.
Leisha went to the mind demon's body herself, cutting off the other horn and one of its arms. These she rolled in a heavy tapestry for later study. Enevera's eyes narrowed at her, but she said nothing.
Why has no one come to investigate the sounds of battle?
I expect it was simple for Alagai Ka to draw wards of silence around your chambers. They will likely remain in power until the sunlight strikes the walls.
It controlled everything you said and did?
It even made us fight each other for its amusement.
Yes, it made us do that.
Why play such cruel games? Why not just have one of you cut my throat as we lay in the pillows?
Because it didn't want to kill you. It's more afraid of your power to inspire than to fight. And none inspires more than a martyr.
Better to discredit you and splinter the unity of your forces.
But you are the Sharda Maka. There can be no further question with Alagai Ka dead at your hand.
That was not Alagai Ka. It was too easy. More likely, this was the least of his princelings. There will be more and greater.
I think so too. Which is why I'm holding you to your promise, Amon. I have seen Evrim's bounty, and now I wish to return home. I must prepare my people.
You do not need to go. I will have you as one of my husband's Jiwa Sen.
A lesser wife? No, I don't think so.
I will still make you my northern Jiwaka if you wish it.
I would still be one of many, Amon. The man I wed will be mine, alone.
His face fell, but Leisha fell firm, and Jardir nodded finally.
The Hollow tribe will be honored regardless. I cannot prevent the tribes from trying to steal a few of your wells, but know that they will be subject to my wrath should they war upon you.
Thank you.
Jardir reached out, touching her shoulder and squeezing gently.
And I apologize if what happened in the Palace of Mirrors was not your own will.
Leisha threw herself at him, hugging him tightly and kissing him on the cheek.
We did that in the light of day, Amon.
I am saddened to see you leave, mistress.
Abon spoke to Leisha a few days later as his wives packed up the last of the endless gifts Jardir had bestowed.
I will miss our conversations.
And miss having the Palace of Mirrors to hide the comeliest of your wives and daughters from the Dal Shuram.
You've learned more of our tongue than you let on.
Why don't you just tell Amon? Let him discipline Hasik and the others. They can't just go around raping whomever they want.
Your pardon, mistress, but the law says they can.
Leisha opened her mouth to reply, but he held up a hand.
Amon's power is not as absolute as he thinks. Disciplining his own men over a Kafit's women would sow discord among the many trust to carry spears at his back.
And that's more important than the safety of your family?
Do not assume you understand all our ways after living among us for a few weeks. I will find a way to protect my family that doesn't threaten my master.
I'm sorry.
Repay me by letting me build a pavilion in your village. My family has one with every tribe to trade in goods and livestock. Evrim's bounty has more grain than it needs, and I know there are hungry mouths to the north.
That's kind of you.
It is not, as you will see when my wives haggle with your people for the first time.
Abon limped over to the window and looked down into the courtyard.
Your escort is ready. Come, and I will see you down.
What happened between Amon and the Parchin, Abon? Why did Amon seem angry when you mentioned him to me? Why were you afraid when I told you I mentioned him to Amon?
If I will not put my master at risk for the sake of my family, what makes you think I will do it for the Parchin?
Answering my question puts Jardir at no risk, I swear.
Perhaps it does, and perhaps not.
I don't understand this. You both claim Arlen was your friend.
He was, my mistress. And because it is so, I will tell you this much. If you know the son of Jeff, if you can get word to him, tell him to run to the end of the world and beyond, because that is how far Jardir will go to kill him.
But why?
Because there can only be one deliverer, and the Parchin and Amon have disagreed before as to who it should be.
Abon went right to Jardir's throne room from the Palace of Mirrors. The moment Jardir saw the Kafit, he dismissed his advisors, leaving the two men alone.
She has left?
Mistress Leisha has agreed to allow me to set up a trading post for the Hollow tribe. It will help facilitate their integration and give us valuable contacts in the north.
Well done.
I will need men to guard the shipments and the stores at the post. Before, I had servants for such heavy duty. Kafit, perhaps, but fit men.
Such men are all Kasharum now.
You see my difficulty. No doubt Sharum will take orders from Kafit in any event, but if you would allow me to select a few Kasharum to serve me in this regard, it would be most satisfactory.
How many?
I could make do with 100, a pittance.
No warrior, even a Kasharum, is a pittance, Abon.
I will pay their family stipends from my own coffers, of course.
Pick your 100.
Will your promises to the mistresses of the Hollow tribe alter your plans?
My promises affect nothing. It is still my duty to unite the people of the Northland for Sharaka. We will march on Lacton in the spring.
Why all these rafts? There's a perfectly good bridge.
Renna gestured toward the nameless collection of huts, too few to even be called a hamlet. Each tiny structure had a raft out by the water, surrounded by wards staked into the banks of the dividing. A few demons prowled the area, testing the wards on the huts, but Rena was wrapped in her warded cloak, and Arlen radiated such power that the occasional hiss and eye contact were enough to keep the Korlings back from him as they walked along the riverbank.
Merchants who don't want the bridge guards rooting through their goods sometimes pay wrathmen to take them across the divide, usually because they're carrying something or someone they shouldn't.
So we can hire one?
Could, but that would mean waiting till dawn and dealing with more rumors. Can't swing my arm in these parts without hitting someone who acts the fool because they think I'm the deliverer.
Don't know you like I do.
There.
Arlen pointed to a raft big enough to carry Twilight Dancer comfortably. There was a great groove in the riverbank where it was hauled up and down each day. He handed Rena one of his ancient gold coins.
Here, go and leave this by the door.
Why? It's new moon. He ain't gonna see us take it, and even if he hears, he sure as the sun ain't gonna cross his wards to run after us.
We ain't thieves, Ren. Smuggler or no, someone earns their keep with this raft.
Rena nodded and took the coin, leaving it on the hut's doorstep. Arlen examined the raft.
Not even a ripping water ward.
Rena returned, kicking at one of the stakes.
These ain't worth spit either. Dumb luck much as anything protecting these rafts.
I can't explain it, Ren. Any 10-year-old in the brook can outward most folk in the free cities, where they've been raised not to trust anyone without a guild license to ward a ripping windowsill.
Can you ward it now?
Not so's it'll dry before dawn.
Rena looked out at the wide expanse of water. Even with her warded eyes, she couldn't see the far side.
What happens we try to cross without wards?
There's usually froggies that hide right at the bank.
We kill those first?
It's a new moon. No light to shine on the raft from above and point us out to the river demon, so odds are we'll get across the deep water safe. By the time we reach the far bank, the sky will be lighter and most of the froggies will have gone back to the core.
Froggies?
Bank demons. Folk call them froggies because they look like big fly frogs, except they're big enough to eat you like a fly. They jump out of the water and catch you with their tongues, swallowing you as they drag you in. You put up too much of a fight, and they just dive into the river to drown it out of you.
So what's the best way to kill one?
With a spear.
Arlen took two and handed her one.
Here, watch.
He moved slowly toward the water's edge. For a moment, all seemed calm. And then the water by the bank exploded as a giant, wide-mouthed Korling sprang out. It gripped two stubby, webbed feet on the bank and snapped its head, shooting its thick, slimy tongue at him. But Arlen was ready and stepped easily to the side. The demon leapt fully onto the bank, covering some 10 feet in a single hop. It shot its tongue at him again, but again Arlen sidestepped, this time charging in close before the tongue could retract. With a quick, precise thrust, he put his spear through the folds of tough skin at its chin and up into its brain.
Trick is, you take them up on shore. You dodge the first tongue and they hop out of the water to try again. They're good jumpers, but their forelegs ain't got the reach of a spear. You can stab from a safe distance.
Ain't much fun in that.
Hey, what's going on out there?
Lamplight flickered in one of the hut's windows, roused by the commotion.
It's time to go.
The one was on the move. The Korling Prince immediately leapt upon its mimic's back and took to the sky, following his trail. It had been a risk, letting the human live another cycle, but one the Mind Demon had deemed acceptable in hope that it might learn how the One had come into powers long since stamped away. The One killed drones nightly, but their number was insignificant, as were the weapons he spread. He was not a unifier like the dangerous one to the south, but it was in his power to be. If he but called, human drones would flock to him, and if that happened, they could threaten the hive. And now he was moving with great decision back toward the human breeding grounds. The Korling Prince was certain he would call to the human drones then, and a unification would begin. That could not be tolerated. The Mind Demon spent the remainder of the first night tracking the One. Just before the dawn, it reached the river, and its prey came into sight. Nothing could be done now with the sun about to rise, but it would find them quickly the next night. The mimic dropped lightly to the riverbank, bending low so the Korling Prince could dismount. As they began to dematerialize, the mimic sensed its master's anticipation for the kill. Rena and Arlen kept riding when the sun rose, passing a branch in the road with an old signpost a few hours later.
And stopping in the town?
You can read?
Of course not. Don't need to read to know what a sign on the road is for.
Point. Ain't got time to waste with other towns right now. I need to get to the Hollow quick.
Why?
Friend's got herself into a fix, and I reckon it's more than a little my fault for staying away so long.
What friend? Who is she?
Leisha Paper, herb gatherer of Deliverous Hollow.
Oh, is she pretty?
Why does it feel like we're 10 summers old?
Because I'm not one of these folks sees you as the Deliverer. They didn't see the look on your face after you clicked teeth with Benny in the hayloft.
Your kiss was better.
Renna tightened her arms around his waist, but he shifted uncomfortably.
We'll cut off the road soon. Too many folk on it these days. There's a path I know will take us to one of my caches for fresh weapons and supplies. From there, we can ford the Angers River and be in the Hollow in a couple nights.
Sounds good.
Renna dozed in the saddle for a time until Arlen gently shook her awake.
Best dismount and put your cloak on. It's getting dark, and we have a few hours left to go before we get to my cache.
Renna nodded, and he pulled the horse up. They were in a sparsely wooded area with tall conifer trees spaced widely enough that they could walk on either side of Twilight Dancer. She dropped from the saddle and reached into her satchel, drawing forth the warded cloak.
Hate wearing this thing.
I don't care what you hate. Corlings are thicker on this side of the Dividing. More towns and ruins to draw them. Treetops around here get rife with woody swinging from branch to branch and dropping on you from above.
As the shadows grew, Renna watched the mist rise slowly through the detritus of needle and cone carpeting the ground between the trees. It curled around the tree trunks like smoke rising up a chimney.
What are they doing?
Some like to materialize up in the trees, out of sight so you don't see them coming. They usually wait till you pass, then drop on your back. There, there's one up ahead. Watch close.
Arlen let her take Twilight Dancer's lead and walked a few feet ahead of them.
Ain't you gonna take your robe off?
Gonna show you a trick. Don't even need your warded skin, you do it right.
Renna nodded, watching intently. They walked a bit farther, and then, as predicted, a bark-skinned demon fell from the trees toward Arlen's back. But Arlen was ready. He twisted and ducked his head under one of the falling demon's armpits, putting his free arm around the Corling's neck from behind, grasping it under the snout. With a sharp pivot, he turned, letting the force of the demon's own fall break its neck.
Sweet day!
There's several ways to do it, but the principle's the same for all. Sharasok is about using their power against them, like wards do. It's how the Krasians survived these last centuries, fighting Alagashrak every night.
They're so good at killing demons. Why do you hate them so?
I don't hate the Krasians. Not all of them, anyway. But their way of life, making slaves of everyone who ain't a man and a warrior, it ain't right. Especially not forced on Thesans at the end of a spear.
What are Thesans?
We are. All the free cities. And I mean for them to stay free.
The one had traveled far while the Corling Prince waited out the day in the Cor, but the mimic was swift, and it wasn't long before the Mind Demon caught sight of its prey, walking his mount through a sparse copse of trees. The Mind Demon circled above, watching as wood drones attacked the human. The one killed these with quick efficiency, hardly slowing his pace. The Mind Demon's cranium throbbed, and the mimic banked to the side and dove into the trees. Its wings melting away as it took the form of a giant wood demon. It caught a thick tree branch before they had fallen far, smoothly pulling out of the fall and into a forward motion. It swung easily from branch to branch, still carrying its mind. They came to a stop at a high vantage, watching the one approach. There was no sign of the female, though the mind demon could not recall her trail ending. It tasted her in the air. She had been about, and recently, but it could not sense her now. Pity. She would have been a useful tool against the one, and her mind was deliciously empty, yet flavored with powerful rage. A meal worth tracking after the one's mind had been similarly consumed.
There's another woody ahead.
It was larger than most, almost too big for the tree branches to support, closer to a rock demon.
Can I try this one?
The warded man shook his head. He glanced back at her, but it took him a moment to find her. The warded cloak still made him dizzy, and it was easy for his eyes to slide right off it without seeing, if his mind was not focused.
You need to sleep when we get to the cache, and you won't if you're all charged with magic.
What about you?
I got warding to do tonight. I'll sleep when we're back in the Hollow.
The wood demon didn't wait for them to pass, picking up momentum and launching itself at him from the front. It was an unexpected move, but the warded man still had plenty of time to duck, reaching out for its lead talent to twist and turn its own force against it. He must have misjudged the length of the demon's limbs, though, because he somehow missed its clawed foot, which grabbed at his robed leg and pulled him from his feet. They both hit the ground heavily, and the Corling rolled away, rising on equal footing with him. They faced off, and immediately the warded man knew something was different about this demon. It circled him patiently, waiting for opportunity. A few times, the warded man lowered his eyes or seemed to turn away, inviting attack, but the Corling didn't take the bait, watching him intently.
This is a smart one.
Need help?
Be a cold day in the core when I need help killing a lone wood demon.
Arlen reached down to open his robe. The Corling launched itself at him before he could untie the garment, tackling him to the ground. The warded man fell in his back and kicked at it, delivering a blow greater than even Twilight Dancer could have done. The demon's arms became the tentacles of a lake demon, wrapping tightly around him. They dug in with a sharp, horned surface, even as suckers latched onto his robe, holding it tight and keeping his wards covered. The demon's maw grew before his eyes, becoming like a bank demon's, large enough to swallow his entire head and shoulders. The warded man snapped his head forward, butting the demon's lower jaw with the impact ward atop his head. A few of the demon's teeth shattered, but there were hundreds more, and it did not let go its grip.
Twilight Dancer!
Twilight Dancer tossed its mighty head, yanking the lead away from Renna, and charged in, horns lowered. They tore through the demon's shoulder. The Corling melted away from Twilight Dancer's horns and grew again, its armor shifting and changing color as it became a rock demon. It swiped a backhand blow at the stallion. Even without its barding and saddlebags, Twilight Dancer weighed nearly a ton, but the powerful demon still sent the horse flying. He struck a tall tree.
Dancer!
The warded man tore the robe from his body and launched himself at the demon. The warded man's blows rocked the Corling back and it gave ground freely under the assault. But the wound Twilight Dancer's horns inflicted was already healed, and the warded man's punches and kicks seemed to have no lasting effect. Its flesh pulsed around the scorched impact points, healing them instantly. He knocked the demon down on one arm, but it dug its great talons into the ground, throwing an enormous clump of dirt and wet leaves at him. The warded man had no chance to dodge and was struck full on. He recovered his feet quickly, brushing the filth from him, but he knew his wards were weakened where it clung to him, if they still worked at all. One of the demon's arms became half a dozen tentacles, each 10 feet long and ending in a sharp horn.
Knight, what part of the core did you come from?
The mimic lashed out with the new limbs. The warded man dodged to the side, rolling and coming up at a run to get inside the demon's reach. There was a gap in the armor plates at its armpit, and he drove his stiffened fingers, painted with piercing wounds, into the crevice. The Corling twisted, and its flesh dissolved around his hand. It was only then, when he was in contact with the demon as it changed, that he realized what it was doing. It was dematerializing and reforming the same way he did, or any Corling for that matter. This demon could simply reform in different ways. 1,000 possibilities opened to the warded man at the realization, too many even to consider. He brushed the epiphany aside like an irritating fly. In the split second when the demon was in transition, the warded man dematerialized as well, intermingling with it slightly to keep it from solidifying. He fought another demon this way once before, and knew that in this state strength and wards were meaningless. It was will that was power here, and the warded man knew his will was greater than any demon's. He locked on to the mimic demon's very molecules, keeping them scattered and immaterial, shepherded by his will. He sensed the creature's sudden fear and returned it with his anger and rage, dominating its will the way a parent would a disobedient toddler. But just as he felt the mimic's will breaking, another will touched him, this one 1,000 times stronger. The Corling Prince touched his mind. Wards had no power in the between state. Any hatchling prince knew that. The one had foolishly made himself vulnerable. The Mind Demon lashed out before the human could recover from his surprise, and then, at last, it knew its foe, diving into the river of his memories. The human was horrified at the invasion, but helpless to stop it. His impotent rage was intoxicating. Then, the one surprised him again. A lesser being would have faltered, but the human left his memories behind, unguarded, and threw his will at the Mind Demon's own river, the essence of its being. He burst through the Mind Demon's defenses, unprepared for such ferocity, and they linked for just a moment before the coiling prince managed to gather its will and sever the connection. The moment his mind was free, the one solidified, forcing the mimic to do the same.
Raina!
The coiling prince looked in shock to see the air ripple and the human female appear as if from nothing, stabbing the mimic with her warded knife. The Mind Demon studied the distortion in the air about the female, a garment trailing behind her as she struck, powerful warding to have hidden her from even a prince's eyes. The moment the one solidified, his mental wards returned, but he also lost his control over the mimic. The Mind Demon had its servant shove him back, then throw itself upon the female, rending the warded garment from her and knocking her to the ground in a tumble. By the time the one came to his feet, two females squared off before him, identical in appearance and action. The Mind Demon linked their thoughts so that the mimic could mirror her utterly, then let go the claws that held it to the trunk of the tree. It stepped out into the open and drifted to the ground as gently as a falling leaf. The warded man blinked, seeing two Rena Tanners before him, identical down to the black stem stains on her skin in varying degrees of fading. They looked at him with the same eyes, wore the same ragged clothes, carried the same knife. Even the magic they radiated seemed the same. He ran to Twilight Dancer's side, forcing himself to ignore the horse's labored breaths as he snatched up his great bow and fitted an arrow. He wavered, unsure who to point it at.
Arlen, she's the demon!
Both Rennas pointed to the other. They looked at each other in shock and then turned back to him.
Arlen Bales, don't you tell me you can't pick me from a coiling!
The warded man looked at both of them and shrugged apologetically. Two sets of identical brown eyes glared at him.
Why'd I have to play kissy that night?
You lost it to sucker.
How'd I lose?
Betty cheated?
A murderous gleam came into both their eyes, and they turned to each other once more, raising their knives.
Don't! Give me a moment!
Of course, Spawn and Arlen, just let me kill the ripping thing and have done!
You ain't a match for it, Ren. Real Renna would mind me.
The women now moved to attack each other. The warded man nodded.
You might as well come out! I know you're there! That changing demon ain't smart enough for this!
A demon appeared. It was small and slender, with an oversized head and a high, knobbed cranium. Its eyes were huge black pools, and it bared only a single row of sharp teeth at him. The talons at the end of its delicate fingers were like an Angerian lady's painted nails.
Been wondering when I'd run into one of you bastards.
Arlen tapped the large ward tattooed in the center of his forehead.
Warded myself up special for it.
The demon tilted its head, studying him. Beside him, the two Rennas stiffened slightly.
Your mind may be shielded, but this female is not.
We can kill her at will.
The demon traced a quick ward in the air, and there was a flash of magic that reduced the arrow to ashes before it struck home.
What do you want?
What does your steed want from the insects its tail swaths? You are an annoyance to be crushed, nothing more.
Come try.
In time, you have no drones to defend you while I have many. Soon I will lay open your skull and consume your mind. But it amuses me to let you bargain for the female first.
You said I had nothing you want.
You don't. But giving up something you wish to keep hidden will cause you pain, and that will sweeten the meal we will make of your mind.
Where did you learn of us?
Why should I tell you? You can't pull it from my head, and she doesn't know.
You humans are weak about your females. It is a failing bred carefully into your ancestors.
Tell us or she dies.
As they spoke, both women lifted identical warded knives and stepped close, holding them to each other's throats.
I could shoot one. Got half a chance of killing your changeling.
It's only a drone. The female, however, holds great meaning to you. You will suffer much if she dies.
The Rennas frowned.
Great meaning?
The warded man turned to look at them fully. There was fear in their eyes and despair.
I'm sorry, Ren. Didn't mean for this, but I warned you.
I know.
It's your fault.
Ain't gonna be able to save you this time, Ren. Not even if I knew which one was you. So you're gonna have to be strong and save yourself. Because that monster's the face of evil, and I ain't gonna let it get away.
The Mind Demon stiffened as it realized what he meant, but it was a second too late as the warded man dropped his bow and leapt at it, covering the distance between them in an instant. Before it could command Renna and the Mimic to kill each other, his warded fist struck the coiling prince's bulbous head with an explosion of magic. The slender demon was thrown several feet by the force of the blow and landed on its back. Its cranium throbbed and the warded man could feel the thrum of power it sent out, though it did no harm to him. Leaping at the Mind Demon again, he pinned it. Each wound healed instantly, but he did not let up, keeping it stunned until he could find a way to kill it. If it dematerialized, he was prepared now to match wills against it. But the Mind Demon stayed solid, perhaps fearing just such a thing. With each blow, it grew more dazed, taking a split second longer to recover. The warded man slipped around the demon into a Sharasak chokehold, the pressure wards on his forearms growing warm as they flared against its throat, building power. It would be over in seconds, but then a wind demon crashed into him. The warded man rolled atop the wind demon and struck it hard in the throat, stunning it. But a wood demon swung down at him from the trees before he could finish it off. It was followed quickly by several more. The human flung the wood drones from its path, charging the coiling prince again, but this time it was ready, drawing a ward that sent a blast of air to strike the one like a physical blow. By the time he rose, he was surrounded again by wood drones. At the Mind Demon's command, they broke branches from the trees to use as weapons, circumventing even the muddied wards of forbiddance on the human skin. The mimicking of her words and actions was horrifying enough, but Renna was truly revulsed when the Mind Demon rose up to take control of her voice, and she realized it had been hiding within her all along, like a stowaway suddenly taking control of the cart. It was an unspeakable violation, worse than anything Harl had ever done to her, worse than the outhouse, worse than being staked at night. She could feel the demon burrowing through her thoughts like a field vole, taking her most cherished and private memories to use as weapons against Arlen. The thought filled her with rage, and she sensed the Mind Demon's pleasure at the response.
I've taken you before.
Renna looked at Arlen and despaired at the resignation in his eyes. She had thought she was strong enough to walk his path, that she could do anything he could, but now that lie was proven. All she could do was get him killed. She tried to raise her knife to bury it in her own throat, but the Mind Demon controlled her body like a jungler's puppet, and she could not act against its will. Even if Arlen guessed right and somehow managed to kill the Mimic, the Mind Demon could make her stab him in the heart just as easily. She wanted to warn him, but the words would not come. But then, the look in Arlen's eyes changed, as if he had come to some decision, and he gazed at her with a trust no one had ever shown her before.
You're gonna have to be strong enough to save yourself, because that monster's the face of evil, and I ain't gonna let it get away.
Her fear fell away at that look, and her eyes hardened. She nodded and felt the Mind Demon's sudden start, thinking Arlen's meaning the same moment she did. It tried to react, but it was not quick enough as Arlen struck a blow to its head that lit the darkness with magic. The demon's presence in her mind vanished, leaving Renna stunned and disoriented. She glanced at the Mimic, still in her form, and saw it stagger similarly, cut off from its mind. Tightening her grip on her father's knife, Renna leapt at the creature, putting the blade into its bare midriff. She put her free arm around the demon, pulling it in close as the black stem wards on her skin activated. Magic shocked through her muscles, filling her with strength as she heaved the knife upward, opening up the creature from navel to collar. The Mimic's body may have looked like her on the outside, but the black, stinking ichor that burst from the wound was nothing from the surface world. She looked at its face, the same face she had seen 1,000 times in the surface of water. Renna was almost brought to tears by the pain and confusion in her own eyes, but then the face snarled like a dog and its teeth began to elongate as it hissed at her. Renna twisted as the Mimic lunged. She grabbed its thick braid in her free hand as it passed, pulling it up short from its fall and baring its nape. The move gave such power to her pivot and slash that her knife passed through its neck effortlessly. Just like that, the fight was over. The demon's body fell to the ground lifelessly, and she was left holding her own head by the hair, eyes rolled back and black ichor dripping from the neck. The warded man felt his ribs snap as the branch struck him to the ground. Before he could recover, another branch struck him. He rolled to dodge the third and the fourth, but he could not regain his footing to rise, and the fifth struck him full in the face, tearing skin and popping one of his eyes from its socket to hang from a string of muscle. With his one good eye, he looked up, seeing several demons swinging branches at once. For a moment, he thought it was his time to die. But then his senses returned for a split second, and he cursed himself for a fool. As the branches came down, they struck only mist. The warded man slipped from the center of the copse, reforming behind one of the wood demons. His wounds healed instantly. He kicked out one of the demon's legs, grabbing it by the horns as it fell and using its own weight to flip it over and break its neck. He leapt at the next demon, putting his thumbs through its eyes. A third demon swung its branch at him, but again he dematerialized and it struck only its blind brother. The warded man solidified again, stabbing his stiffened fingers through a crevice in the attacking demon's bark-like armor. He had known no mortal weapon could harm him if he saw its approach, but now he realized it was much more than that. Anything short of death or dismemberment could be healed in an instant. The corlings around him had become nothing but flies to swat from his path. They weren't smart enough to dematerialize offensively on their own, and the mind demon would be wary to do it through them, lest it meet his will on that other plane. He ignored the remaining wood demons, passing through them like a ghost, and only solidifying when the path to the corling prince was clear. He looked at the demon, and a wave of dizziness overcame him. The confidence that had suffused him a moment earlier vanished as he realized he was only just discovering the powers the demon had known for thousands of years. It bared its fangs and lifted a talon to draw a ward in the air. But then the tip of a blade burst from its chest, flaring bright with magic. The dizziness left him as Rena's cloak fell away, and he saw her holding the demon around the throat with her free arm, while the contact wards along her blade built in power. The warded man did not hesitate, leaping forward to strike hard blows to keep it off balance. The wards flared, and the mind demon opened its mouth as if to scream, but no sound came out. Instead, its cranium pulsed, and the resulting thrum struck the warded man like a harsh wind, knocking him back. Rena seemed not to notice the effect, but all through the trees and seemingly for miles around, demons shrieked in agony. A wind demon dropped from the sky, crashing through the branches of a tree to hit the leaf bed dead. The wood demons that had attacked him likewise collapsed, killed by the demon's psychic scream, and in that instant the mind demon fled. The warded man whirled back to see the mind demon melt away from her grasp, breaking into mist that fled down a nearby path to the core. Instinctively, he followed. The path to the core was like following a brook upstream in the dark. He could feel the path, but sight had no meaning on the path to the core. He simply felt the flow of magic stemming from the center of the world and followed back against the current. The warded man kept his will focused on the evil taint of the corling prince ahead of him, and it seemed they raced for miles before he drew close enough to grab at the demon. He had no hands with which to grab, but he willed his essence to latch onto the demon, and like two men blowing smoke into the same cloud, they mingled and their wills clashed. The warded man had expected the demon's will to have weakened, but it was no less potent now, and they clawed through each other's minds, jabbing fingers into any delicate crevice they could find. The corling prince laid bare all his life's failures, mocking him with the fate he had abandoned Rena to, or brought upon the Rhizonians, teasing him with images of Jardir forcing himself upon poor, innocent Leisha. It was almost too much, but in his pain he lashed out, cracking through the mind demon's own defenses. He saw in that moment a glimpse of the core, a place of eternal darkness but lit with magic's glow more brightly than the desert wastes. Instantly, the demon's will retreated, ceasing its attack to protect its own thoughts. The warded man sensed the advantage and pressed his assault. He learned of the hive. The warded man might have won then, if not for the horror of the sight. The corlings that came to the surface to hunt were but the barest fraction of what the core could spew forth. Millions of demons, billions! For the first time since he had found the wards of old, he despaired that they could ever be defeated. The mind demon's will roared over him, and their struggle fell to a more basic level, the simple will to survive. But here the warded man held the advantage, for he had no fear of death, and did not look over his shoulder as it approached them both. The demon did. And in that instant, its will broke, and the warded man absorbed its magic into his own essence, leaving a burnt remain he threw from the path to the core to scatter away forever. Alone on the path, the warded man could finally hear the true call of the core, and it was beautiful. There was power there, power not evil in itself. Like fire, it was beyond good or evil. It was simply power, and it beckoned him like a teat to a hungry infant. He reached for it, ready to taste.
Arlen! Arlen Bales, you come back to me!
Arlen Bales, a name he hadn't used in years. Arlen Bales had died out on the Krasian desert. The voice was calling a ghost. He turned back to the core, ready to embrace it.
Don't you leave me again, Arlen Bales!
Rena!
He'd left her in dire straits twice now, but the third would be the deepest cut, damning her to the very life he sought to escape after she had worked so hard to save his. What could the embrace of the core offer that hers could not? Rena's throat was hoarse from screaming when the mist seeped back up from the ground and began to take Arlen's form. It seemed only a moment ago that he was as good as Cord, and she expecting no better. But now, suddenly, every demon in the area was dead, the night hauntingly quiet as she and Arlen stared at each other. The mind demon's magic feedback had been intense, and Rena's senses felt more alive than they ever had in her life. She practically crackled with energy, and her heart was pounding like a jungler's hand drums. Arlen glowed so intensely, he hurt to look at.
Dancer!
Arlen ran to his horse.
Broke a lot of bones. Ain't never gonna run again, even if he makes it through. Dad would say to put him down.
To the core with anything your dad would have done.
Rena felt his pain like a slap in the face and knew in that moment how much he loved the horse. She knew what it was like when an animal was your only friend in the world. She wished he could love her half so much.
Wounds have stopped bleeding. Must have taken some magic off that changing demon before he was struck.
Mimic. They're called mimics.
How do you know?
Learned a lot when I touched the Corling Prince's mind.
Arlen reached out, gripping one of the stallion's broken legs and pulled the bone straight. Holding them in place with one powerful hand, he drew a ward in the air with the other. The ward flared and the bones knit before her eyes. One by one, Arlen tended the horse's wounds. But as Twilight Dancer began to breathe comfortably, Arlen began to weaken. His magic, so bright a moment ago, was dimming rapidly. Already it was darker than she had ever seen it. She touched his shoulder and felt a flash of pain as some of her own magic flowed into him.
Enough!
The warded man looked at Rena and felt a profound sense of guilt.
I'm sorry, Ren.
Sorry? For what?
I turned my back on you once when we were young, leaving you to Harl so I could chase demons. And then tonight, I did it again.
Felt that demon in my head. Felt it slither into me worse than Dad ever could. It was pure evil straight from the core. Killing that monster was worth more than 1,000 Rena Tanners.
The warded man reached out and touched her cheek, his eyes unreadable.
I thought so before. But now I ain't so sure.
I ain't taking back my promise. If this is your life, then I am to support it like a proper wife should. No matter what.
Dawn was approaching, and the core called to the warded man still. But it was a distant thing now, easily ignored. Because of her. Because with Rena, he finally remembered who he was. The words came easily to him.
I, Arlen Bales, promise myself to you, Rena Tanner.
The Demon Cycle, Book 2. The Desert Spear Part 3 is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2011, Peter V. Brett. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the author. Production copyright 2012 by The Cutting Corporation Incorporated. All rights reserved. With performances by Thomas Penny, Colleen Delaney, Michael Glenn, Ken Jackson, Kimberly Gilbert, Alyssa Wilmoth, Bradley Smith, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, Nick DePinto, MJ Casey, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, Johan Detweiler, Christopher Graybill, Stephen Carpenter, Christopher Sheeran, Terrence Aselford, Ren Casey, Katie Karka, Nanette Savard, Karen Novak, Thomas Keegan, Daniel Sontag, Patrick Bussink, Lily Beacon, James Lewis, Drew Copus, Alexander Strain, and Mort Shelby. Adapted and directed by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Demon Cycle, be sure to look for Brett Weeks' Night Angel trilogy and Brandon Sanderson's Elantris and Warbreaker. Available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for previews of other exciting graphic audio material.
Mr. Cotton.
Oh, it's a bullseye. They changed my name to Target. You call me Target.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens.
Holy cats, that blonde walked in. And I plumb stopped whatever I was doing right then and there. And I went weak at the knees.
Here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna write me a deed that says that Armand Argo or his heirs owns the Fat Tuesday. Then you're gonna write the same thing for every other claim the Scruples took over.
He'd kill me!
Then get out of town or start writing now. Because if you don't, you won't have any fingers left. And that's just the beginning of the part you'll lose.
How you doing, big fella?
Why are you here?
To see you, Cotton. I couldn't get you out of my head.
People must learn to abide by their agreements. Poor dear decided not to fulfill her obligations. Just like you.
So what? I quit you. You son of a...
Get off, Arnold.
I'll kettle myself if you're too chicken.
Well, it ain't a matter of chicken. It's getting it right. You can't go making mistakes in the killing business.
Well, I wouldn't mind a mistake or two if I get to keep my gold mine.
That's the last time you pull one on me!
There's something you should know. Billy Blue was dragged into the alley behind the mint and killed. There's not much we can do against an army of killers except lay low for the moment.
He offered me a deal. My life if I snitch on you, death if I don't, torture and death if I tell you about it.
Cotton Pickens, Book 2, Six Ways from Sunday.
Available now in graphic audio.
All hail Jill Kismet, the great pretender.
Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Crow's Jill Kismet.
They'll come for me, here or wherever I am, before dawn tomorrow. Meeting on the bridge is just a ploy. There's another game being played here, and I want to find out what it is before it gets any deeper. Or another hellbreed comes through to wipe my city off the map.
Book 5. Heaven's Spite.
And if it...
If it doesn't work, Anya, you will have to hunt me down. No pity, no mercy, no nothing. Kill me before I'm a danger to my city. Kill Perry, too. Burn him.
scatter the ashes as far as you can. Clear?
I got a new chin. And wrestled him down as he twisted. Then he shot me. He shot me 4 times.
I'm going to take care of it.
How the hell are you going to do that?
I've been playing Perry for years now.
If you didn't even know that he...
No matter what I knew or know or should have known, Mikiel's dead and my city's in danger. My best bet is getting that fucking hellbreed to a place where I can deal with him. With you and the Wares getting those evocation sites shut down, I have a chance of getting Saul out of this alive and my city another few days of rolling along.
Jill, you can't...
Do it, Anya. Now! I cut, the blade sliding in with little resistance. I sheared through whatever served him as stomach muscle. I finished with a twist. And brought my knee up. I heaved him away.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.